Welcome to Financial Repression Authority's Roundtable Insight, where the best fund managers, economists, and industry leaders discuss the key investment issues and challenges in the current macroeconomic environment.
Hi, welcome to FRA's Roundtable Insight. This is Richard Benulli. Today we have Ira Harris. Ira is an independent trader, successful hedge fund manager, global macro consultant trading foreign currencies, bonds, commodities and equities for over 40 years. Also, he was CME director from 1997 to 2003. Welcome, Ira.
Richard, great to be back with you. I love doing these. We cover so much ground. I have to tell you, my blog readers love them. I get great feedback.
Excellent.
Personally, so we cover a lot of good ground.
Thank you. Thought today maybe we could focus on currencies, everything from the U.S. dollar to the euro, yen, gold, and cryptocurrencies. So maybe we could begin with that on the cryptocurrencies. We see them going almost vertical in the last week or month here. Bitcoin, Ethereum is another one. I think I last checked on Bitcoin, it was over $3,000 Canadian. Just wondering your thoughts on that, like why the run-up recently, what your thoughts are, and is this connected to China capital flight?
Oh, these are such great questions. I'm not sure, with the cryptocurrencies, I have a very good person to discuss this whole blockchain scenario with. I call him the American Limey. He responds to my blog quite a bit. So we talk about this, and I'm just beginning to understand somewhat how this blockchain works. I'm not that sophisticated technically. I just get by with what I need to do. So I'm not sure, how that all plays out. But it seems to have really caught on for people who are trying to do what, people like I have always talked about, that trading gold, and I know Peter Buchvar is, and I've talked about this quite a bit, that we treat it as a haven. And it's been very difficult for me to understand how the cryptocurrency, quote unquote, market works and why I should be secure that if I bought it, that it would hold value, because it seems to just move around in such huge gyrations. We saw it on the movement of when it had a big fall, almost a 50% depreciation a couple months ago, when it appeared that the guys from Facebook who started Facebook with Zuckerberg, and they were behind the push for creating a Bitcoin ETF. And when it looked like they weren't going to get approval, the currency dropped significantly in value. So I don't know. It makes me leery. As I've talked with you before, Bitcoin scares me more because Ben Bernanke says he understands it but doesn't understand gold.
What
we're talking about is the electronic currency. And in some ways, central banks, if you listen to them, especially now that we're at negative interest rates, they would love, and I use that word exactly in its full essence, to go to like a cryptocurrency or better, an electronic type currency, because then they could control what people do with their money when they need to go to negative interest rates.
Yes.
That makes me skeptical. So, and that's everything that the Financial Repression Authority should be opposed to, because we know what that means. I don't know. There's a lot to understand here and a lot to learn, and I'm just really beginning to learn it, but I'm not investing in it. People, when it went, first time it ran up to 1300, people were all clamoring, calling me, going, oh, you got to invest in this. And then when it was back down to 200, the phone stopped ringing and everybody was wondering what happened. So there's too many uncertainties to this. Me, if I'm looking to protect my money, to secure, I would rather do it in precious metals. So that's, I'm an old timer, and you could say, you're just an old guy. What do you know? And that may, I'll have to accept that, but I go where my comfort zone is.
Yeah, I mean, the concept on the cryptocurrencies in the form of Bitcoin or Ethereum doesn't appear to be based on anything in terms of either a commodity like gold or precious metals, or a, you know, the full faith and credit of a government like the U.S. dollar. So it's a bit of a wonder how it's getting its value at the moment, since it's not backed really by anything in terms of a commodity or a government. Do you think the value is being driven by its value as perceived to transport capital internationally, such as capital flight leaving China?
Well, you know, that's the ultimate question. And if that's the case, I'd be very leery about it, because here's what we do know about currencies. Governments don't like competition. And believe me, what are the Chinese doing here? What are they watching? Because we know this, that the Chinese wanted to shut this down, they could shut it down whenever they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Because they still have tendencies towards great repression, you know, to be very repressive. Tiananmen Square was only 28 years ago. In fact, we're almost coming to the anniversary, June 4th, I believe, of 1989. So there are all types of things at work here. So, again, I want to see some way this plays out. And if it's only the global underground, so to speak, who's utilizing this as an effort to hide money or move money, well, okay, but then I get a little bit, you know, I get even more nervous. So a lot of questions. I want to see a lot more. I want to see it be accepted. And I know every time that somebody issues a statement, oh, so-and-so is accepting bitcoins for payment for this, 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 and this. Okay, great. Doesn't do anything for me. I've got a lot more to learn about and a lot more to see. Am I missing an opportunity? Maybe. But you know what? I also missed an opportunity to invest in Bernie Madoff. So, you know, okay. Shame on me, I guess.
Yeah. And, I guess if it comes down to a movement by governments to get into cryptocurrencies from a government perspective, as you mentioned earlier, you know, in the move towards negative interest rates or a cashless society, then it would make sense to have some type of cryptocurrency that would be backed by something like a commodity, preferably, you know, like preferably gold versus nothing like Bitcoin or Ethereum or a government, right? Like it would be just another form of fiat currency. So in other words, using a cryptocurrency that is regulated within the financial system, but backed by something like gold or silver. Your thoughts?
Yeah, you know what? Yeah. Another Canadian sent me a piece this morning, and the guy, his name is, his first name is Bosco, Bosco K. He's from Toronto, and he's actually put together an interesting business with buying and selling gold, but issuing bonds to do so, because he picked out, he's a blog reader of mine, and all the, for the last 4 years, I've talked about the need for like the IMF to go to a gold-backed bond. So he picked up on that. But he sent me an interesting piece today about Sharia-compliant crypto gold. The colon to that was, could Islam be preparing for a new world reserve currency, which would be backed by different types of gold? So everybody's looking for cryptocurrencies. And I say, great, you know, if that's where the world's moving, great. And I understand the need for it, especially in a fiat dominated world currency in which world banks, in which world central banks have acted, I don't think in the best interest of holders of the currency. They've done as much as they could to depreciate the currency when they need to. And I think, you know, that has forced people to reconsider things. So I'm not fully ensconced in this concept of the Sharia-compliant crypto gold yet, but I know that would fit the investment scenario. You know, a lot of Mideast players. Certainly, as I was growing up in the markets and learning my trade, the Saudis especially were big buyers of gold to protect the value of their assets when they needed to be so. So there's a history to it. Is cryptocurrency going to do that? I don't know. I don't know because, you know, to me, if you're going to be a currency, you still have to be the ability to increase the amount in circulation because we know the economies grow. So, okay, you know what? I have a lot to learn about it, but right now, just call me skeptical.
Okay, and interesting. How about moving on to the U.S. dollar currency? I know recently you've taken a bit of a bearish view on that. We're just wondering on thoughts in relation to an interview that Russell Napier did in the last week with Eric Townsend. Russell mentions a few factors why he thinks the U.S. dollar could be could continue to be bullish as it has been in over the last several months, years, in terms of some factors that he sees as bullish. One is he mentioned the insufficient rate. In terms of Japan's is running out of savings, and therefore there's an insufficient private sector savings level to fund its government. Any thoughts on that factor?
Well, you know, I don't. I'm sorry, but when you started asking, you said that I've been bearish on the dollar, so this was in contravention. I think that's why you wanted my response, and I was. You know, I was. You know, I took Trump, and of course now Mark Fields, and we had talked about that. You know, the U.S. manufacturers have been pushing for a weaker dollar. And I thought that that was one of the tools that Trump was going to use, but we don't know yet. Insufficient savings rate. You know, I could make the counter argument to that. One of the things that got Japan through their terrible times was they had a tremendously high savings rate. Japan has phenomenal amounts of investment all around the world, and they run current account surpluses. Not just because they run positive trade balances, but their investments, when they bring that money home via dividends, via interest rate clipping coupons, or they have vast amount of investments. So if their savings are drawn down, my first discussion would be that, you know, the yen I don't think will collapse like other people think, even though the underlying fundamentals of the yen are terrible in other ways, but here's what we do know about the Japanese. And one of the reasons why it takes on a safe haven status is because when the Japanese get nervous about the world, they bring money home and they have huge amounts to bring home. And, you know, if the Japanese savings rate was, if they were digging so deep into their savings, they may have to bring a lot of global investments home. So in the short term, it actually may be more bullish again. But, you know, having not talked to whose arguments? Napier, right?
Yeah, Russell Napier.
Yeah, not having sat into those discussions, just in a cursory way, I could view it in that light. So I'm not so quick to go there.
The second factor he mentions is on the Chinese currency, basically from China's policy of trying to keep the currency low value in terms of depreciation or devaluation in order to stimulate an export-based economy and therefore, you know, giving rise to a more bullish dollar. Any thoughts on that?
Well, you know what? Again, which hat do you want to put on? If I put on the hat of Michael Pettis, the Chinese are going to move towards a more domestically based economy, then it will not be in their interest to depreciate the currency. So will the currency go down because China has troubles? You know, maybe, but it's already depreciated over the last 18 months in anticipation of a lot of those problems. And now it's kind of stabilized here. I don't think so. That's a pretty easy, some would say that's low-hanging fruit. but I'm not sure. It all depends how much the Chinese move towards enhancing themselves in a domestic-based economy rather than solely an export-based economy. So if they're moving that way, I would say that the yuan is actually going to appreciate.
Yeah, that makes sense. Go ahead.
Let me follow up with that. And I had this discussion the other day with somebody who I respect. I'm much more fascinated in the yuan-peso relationship than I am anything else right now, because Mexico stands to be a real competitor, especially in whatever way that they're going to try to tweak NAFTA. So that's a much more interesting relationship. So I'd be much more in the argumentative camp that the peso, the yuan needs to not appreciate against the peso. So from that relationship, tell me where we go, and I'll give you a much better understanding on the dollar-yuan relationship.
I see. And the last factor Russell mentions is on the U.S. dollar-denominated debt, you know, internationally. If there's a recession, the thinking goes that it could result in a deflation and falling corporate cash flows, if you will, that then results in a push to pay back debt, you know, resulting in a clamoring for more U.S. dollars and a sort of a bullish slant on the U.S. dollar exchange rate.
Okay. That's a very good point, and a point that has to be discussed, because we've talked about that, because that was my opposition to the border adjustment tax, and it would be a massive mistake because it would cause the dollar to rally and would set off the global recession. So this is what's going to come first. Will the global recession cause a run into dollar? I'm not sure, because if that's the case, I look at dollar-based assets, where we used to be able to make that argument. But if the dollar, if the U.S. equity market is a flows argument, and global flows are heading there, well, the dollar really hasn't performed that well over the last 4 or 5 months. So I'm not sure that that one's going to play out. In fact, I'm very sure that one's not going to play out. And if the world gets into that type of financial difficulty because of the debt, I think some of the old true relationships are going to break down dramatically. And that's really when I want to start buying gold, because that's what the world really fears. It's a global deflation. And I'm not sure that I want to own any currency. Maybe the Swiss franc certainly holds up. And they get the alchemists of the they pulled off the greatest alchemy act in the history of mankind, because people still want Swiss francs, no matter they keep printing them. But I'm going to tell you what, if that's the case, I'm not going to dollar. I'm not making a bullish dollar argument at all. I will be loading up on the precious metals and stay away from all currency.
Yeah, exactly. And now you mentioned U.S. President Donald Trump. Is it technically possible for Trump to initiate a lower dollar? Like, is it just talk, or is it technically possible through some mechanism for the president to lower the value of the dollar?
Well, we know that that's possible, because we saw the Plaza Accord of 1985. We know it's possible because we saw Nixon in 71 and 73. We know it's possible when they want to. Is it an easy task? No, especially because the environment today is that everybody wants a weaker currency. So, back in 85, the dollar had gotten so ridiculously strong that it was causing problems in other ways. So you could get people to sign on to a type of Plaza Accord, because they feared the political ramifications if they didn't. Okay, that's what political ramifications do we have now? What can the president do? It's not just going to the currency. He has to explain to his friends and neighbors and trading partners why they want a lower dollar, and then get them to sign on to it, because they would view it as the best, as what's best for the entire global financial system. You know, that's what we're discussing here. Can he do things like that? Well, absolutely. They have plenty of tools in their toolbox. It's not nice to use them, but if they needed to use them, they're certainly there. He can order the Treasury to intervene. You know, that's under the purview. The Federal Reserve, you know, people make the mistake because, you know, the all-powerful Oz behind the curtain, Ben Bernanke and Janet Yellen, and certainly, of course, Alan Greenspan, they don't have that ability. If they wanted to stop the president, if they thought he was making a mistake, the only thing they could do, of course, is raise interest rates dramatically. And then we'd really have a Volcker, yeah. Because that's Volcker. So, no, you know, if he wanted to, he could. All he does, of course, he has a bully pulpit, he could jawbone, as we've seen him make mention of. But they're not in that stance right now because it would cause a lot of pandemonium in the markets because everybody wants a weaker currency. He could do it. He could actually do it by, of course, having bad policy. Bad policy will do it more than anything else. And we've seen a little bit of that. So we're holding things. And I'm not jumping into anything here. I wish they'd get their house in order, because as long as we're talking about this, I'll tell you what, watching Steve Mnuchin and what's his name, Mick Mulvaney, the budget budget director.
Yeah.
That should have been enough to drive the dollar lower by itself.
Yeah.
I have to tell you, this is a nonpartisan view, totally nonpartisan view. I don't care, as I mentioned, but that was the most inept and the most inept effort I've ever seen to explain a budgetary process. And they went about it in a terrible way. And I will refer back to, of course, one of my favorite guys, you know, when it comes to the budgetary process, which was Alan Simpson. Alan Simpson is, when Ricky Santelli interviewed him yesterday, which extended out to about 7 minutes, was probably one of the greatest senses of what is wrong with the whole process. And I was a big fan, and you know this, of the Bowles, of Bowles Simpson, and I thought that President Obama showed a very severe lack of leadership by not running ahead with Bowles Simpson. Having read that twice, that 73-page document, I think it was 73 pages, and I fell in love with it. I said, not that it was a being an end-all, but it was a way to begin the discussion. And I tell you what, when you start out, as Mnuchin did, saying, well, we're raising defense expenditure X amount, and that's non-negotiable, you lose me right away. Because the great thing about Bowles Simpson is that the first thing they did was move to start cutting defense spending. And I'm a big believer in that. Don't tell me that you are conservative or you're a libertarian or you have this view about balancing budget and looking at the budget in a very mature fashion and tell me you're in favor of raising defense spending. Forget about it. You lose me totally. And again, that's not a political argument. That's a discussion probably more from what it really means to be a responsible budgeter. But the defense budget becomes sacrosanct because, you know, as Phil Oakes saying years ago, you know, lovely, lovely, I'm a liberal, you know, but I vote for all defense spending because I got a defense plan in my district. Okay, so let's stop the games. Let's stop the nonsense. Let's get on Alan Simpson's car. And if Trump and his appointees were to get really serious about this, that's where they would go. The United States does not need to increase its defense budget. And if anybody wants to call in and if this ruffles some feathers, I'm ready to go toe-to-toe with anybody who wants to argue it. Because I don't own a defense plan. I don't own defense stocks. Not a moral question. I just don't. So if you really want to get at the budget, then let's start with defense. And you watch, everything else falls in line. Because everybody gets some defense funding. You got a defense plant in your district. You got a base in your district. You are benefiting, so everybody goes quiet. Alan Simpson was just masterful. I'm just picking up where he left off.
And what about on the euro currency? Do you still see the potential for a euro rally, and how that rally could benefit Angela Merkel going into the elections there in Germany?
Yeah, I have to say that, you know, I wrote that piece the other day, but I talked about this with you months ago, that this, after the French elections are over, we could look for the euro to probably rally and more hawkish, whatever that means. It's such a ridiculous adjective, hawkish central bankers. Hard to be hawkish when you're
down. Okay.
Your two-year note is negative 70 basis points, so I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
But it would fit her for what her needs are, because she's, after that election in, from when, two Sundays ago, when the Christian Democrats won North Rhineland, Westphalia, for the first time, or the Social Democrats have controlled that state for 46 out of the last 51 years, and for them to win, she's got some real wind at her back. And where I thought she was far more vulnerable, you know, the Germans are rallying behind her, and she may win an absolute majority. So you may see her get more hawkish. And to make my case, because let's see, Monday, we heard her say that, yes, the euro is too weak, you know, relative for Germany. Same thing that Donald Trump said, but it's amazing. He got beat up for it, but she now, after the French election, she could say it. And then yesterday, of course, we've got from Wolfgang Schreibel, he came out and said the same thing, that the euro was too weak for what the German economy was at. Which, of course, because the question for the EU is always, whose euro is it? You know, there's no getting away from that. Whose euro is it? And we stand on that, and that's the way it goes. So, we are stuck in this mess, but yeah, the euro has mega problems. France does not need a stronger euro. Italy doesn't need a stronger euro. Spain doesn't need a stronger euro. But will the euro go up here? Yeah, it'll help Merkel. So I think, where can it run to? I don't know. 115, 120, 125? I don't know. But you see, as Germany now presses on to its election, the discussion seems to change a little bit. And with all the problems the U.S. has, going back to the ridiculous presentation again of Mnuchin, it's scary, what the discussion is. And that makes you nervous, of course, about the U.S. But of course, the equity market continues rallying, so nobody cares. You know, Hyman Minsky's rolling, spinning in his grave. He's not even rolling. He's spinning in his grave. Going, don't you see? Don't you see what's going on here? Yes, we see. The fact that the dollar cannot gain any type of strength with everything else that's going on in the world, all the other geopolitical problems, to me, you know, that is a warning sign that things are not good here and that the euro can go higher. Especially as Germany, you know, the talk. Draghi, the ECB, I think, meets in 2 weeks from tomorrow. Yeah, 2 weeks from now. So that'll be interesting. He can't do anything. He's locked here because, again, he's not going to announce any type of quote-unquote tapering of the present QE. This plan, the $60 billion a month, now runs out until December of 2017. And remember that Draghi needs to keep building that ECB balance sheet, because that's the one that is really significant, because that's what's going to lead those holdings by the ECB is going to pave the path for creation of a Eurozone bond, which is what the real game is, and it's capturing the Germans. And Merkel can't talk about it. She'll keep yelling, which she did, because Macron made the mistake of coming out and talking about, you know, the need for basically a Eurozone fiscal authority, and with that, of course, a bond, which makes her, you know, which is the George Soros papers for the last 4 years. So they're all, you know, they've probably been sitting at Bilderberg or in Davos discussing this. But that's where they're going. It will not be easy, but you will hear Merkel and company keep talking down a Eurozone bond. They'll bail out Greece. Greece will get its money because they certainly will not want this to become an issue in the German elections, because it will undermine Merkel a little bit. And with her riding so high now, they can afford to ramp up the rhetoric about everybody else and let's go from there. So I would say stay the course.
Great. And as you conclude in your blog post, it seems that the chancellor is in the arms of two Italians, Mario Draghi and Niccolo Machiavelli. As Mick Jagger would sing, you say, "Angie, your kisses still taste sweet."
Yeah. Right. What was that song, "Torn Between Two Lovers"?
Yeah.
Because she's Machiavellian in the way she's going to play the elections and the way she's going to manipulate this. And, you know, and Mario Draghi, you know, is pushing and pulling at her, because without her support, he certainly can't do what needs to be done in the Eurozone to keep, you know, bolstering up the terrible situation of Italy, France, and Greece. It all plays together, but he's got to be wary. The stronger that she gets, the better it'll be for him after the election, because, you know, she is, you know, she's Angela Merkel is Mario Draghi's guardian angel, and they kind of need each other. But as long as there's no blow up in any of the European banks, before September, before Germany's September election, they can keep talking like things will change and the ECB will start to remove its stimulus, blah, 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 and we'll go on from there.
Great, great insight as always, Ira, and our listeners can follow your work at www.iragharris.com. Great blog post, post every few days or so, really great insight, and we follow there all the time. Thank you very much, Ira.
Well, let me do one advertisement, because I'm coming to the end of selling these. If you can't, you must get to read The Rotten Heart of Europe by Bernard Connolly. It is a mandatory read. Again, go to the website, The Rotten Heart of Europe at gmail.com. Order the book. Believe me, if any of your listeners put on big conferences, I will make them a grand bargain, because I've been having these books. I have a few thousands. I have 5,000 or 6,000 left, and it's time to, you know, I just want to get them out there. It is a great read, and it's mandatory to understanding Europe. And especially now, people need to understand, because you can't turn to any financial media, television, favorite people talking about Europe, 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 Europe's the place to be. That may well be the case. But if by reading The Rotten Heart of Europe, you will at least understand where the pratfalls may exist, as long as you're going to be investing there. So I implore your readers, and again, if they're running a charity event for a financial situation or any type of charity event, they can contact me through you or through any other way, or at the Rotten Heart of Europe at gmail.com, and I would be happy to help them provide books for any type of major charity. So, you know what? That's where we reside, and if you're really listening and wanting to learn, it's a great opportunity to do that.
And we will post those, your instructions, on the website as well.
Okay, great. I appreciate it as always, Richard. Everybody have a happy Memorial Day. And for all the veterans out there, I salute you and thank you for your service.
Thank you very much, Ira. Thank you.
The FRA Roundtable Insight Show is for informational and educational purposes only, and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the show each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Any discussions among the panel participants or responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the panel participants and do not take into consideration the listener's suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Please be advised that you invest or speculate at your own risk.